Welcome to the Citizens for Health radio show on Building Fortunes Radio with your hosts, Jim Turner and Peter Mingles. Make sure you check us out by clicking on the Citizens for Health radio show link on buildingfortunesradio.com. That's www.buildingfortunesradio.com. Citizens for Health provides over 100,000 supporters with consumer news, action alerts, and opportunities to take action. For nearly two decades, Citizens for Health has been a nonprofit pioneer in the natural health freedom movement. The Citizens for Health Education Foundation offers tools to inform the public of health issues and educate and influence policymakers. Jim Turner is here to spread the word about some of the most interesting topics that can affect your world, from the dangers of mislabeled or dangerous products to the questions and concerns of vaccines. You'll want to listen to Jim as he speaks on behalf of Citizens for Health. And now, on to our show with Jim Turner and Peter Mingles. Take it away, Peter.
Hello, everyone. Peter Mingles here. You're listening to us on Building Fortunes Radio. It's www.buildingfortunesradio.com. This is a special Citizens for Health radio show. And if you heard the intro, you heard the name Jim Turner. Jim Turner was an attorney over in Washington, D.C., passed away about 2 years ago. And I still keep that intro because we started to do this radio show again with the president of Citizens for Health. His name is James Gormley. But if you have ever listened to Jim Turner before, he's a wealth of information. And if you go back to buildingfortunesradio.com/citizens, you'll be able to hear the previous radio shows that we've done. So Citizens for Health is the organization. Citizens.org is the website. And we are here today with a special guest. But I first want to introduce James Gormley. James is a gentleman who's been working with the Citizens for Health organization for a super duper long time. We started doing some radio shows seriously in 2024 after that little retirement, if you will, just running replays that Jim Turner had done. And I have a huge level of respect for James. We were talking about something and he said, "Could I invite a guest?" And I said, "Absolutely, anytime you want." And when he told me who he was going to have on today's radio show, I was super duper excited. I've been following this gentleman for a long time. He spoke with us at a meeting that we held one time for a trade association. And he doesn't know this, but I've been socially stalking him as far as some of the things that he's been working on in a polite way and giving him full endorsements and telling people all along the way. So you'll want to hear from our guest speaker as well. But the first thing I want to do is kind of get out of the way and say, James Gormley, thanks for being here on your own radio show.
Many thanks. And my appreciation to Senate candidate Jonathan Emord. And he's the FDA dragon slayer. He's Jonathan Emord very, very kindly agreed to be on the program today. I've been following Mr. Emord's work for, well, since I entered the natural products industry, probably the beginning of 95, and he had already been, involved with many important issues already. And Jonathan Emord is a constitutional attorney. He is a health freedom, liberty-loving attorney and expert. An advocate, and he, I think George Nouri referred to him as a knight in shining armor and as a warrior out to save our rights. He's also been, as I said, referred to as the FDA dragon slayer, because I think he's defeated the FDA, and he can clarify this for me as far as how many times, but he's defeated the FDA, and a defeat for the FDA on issues that are anti-health freedom is a win for health freedom and a win for consumers and a win for the health freedom community, a win for the natural products industry. I want to introduce you, Jonathan. Please feel free to give a couple of quick thoughts before I get into any questions.
Well, thank you, James. And it's a total of 8 times on constitutional grounds against the FDA in federal court, and it's been a great run, and now, unfortunately, our nation faces some of the greatest threats to health freedom and to liberty in general that we've ever faced, and we have a very short period of time within which to save our country or witness authoritarianism to replace all respect of the rule of law and constitutional limits on government power.
Well, that's a very good point. I, in one of your books, and I think I have all of your books, and in one of them, you had a great quote. You were talking about our nation's unelected leaders. That's not even to get into the elected leaders problem that we have at the moment, but just looking at the unelected bureaucrats, you said, I believe I'm quoting correctly, called The Rise of Tyranny. You said they have replaced liberty with tyranny and have caused the nation as a whole to lose its way. I know I'm starting with a very broad stroke point, and we can drill down into specific areas in terms of the FDA or in terms of the Federal Trade Commission, et cetera, and specific battles. But that, I like that broad comment because it is a broad overarching problem in general, isn't it?
It is. Three-quarters of all federal law is not the product of those we elect. It's the product of the unelected heads of over 250 different agency bureaus and departments. And the consequence of that is that we no longer have a functioning constitutional republic. Instead, we have a bureaucratic oligarchy ruling America. And that has dire consequences for individual liberty because before the administrative state, in administrative law courts of the agencies, you don't have a right to a trial by jury even when they take your property and liberty away. You don't have the right against general warrants so they can demand any information about you and you have to turn it over. You don't have a right to a presumption of innocence. You are essentially presumed guilty until you prove yourself innocent. And you don't even have a right to confront your accuser. In fact, you're kept from knowing who your accuser is. And you don't have a right to a set charge against you. They can change the nature of the charges all the way up to their decision. And you do not have a right to an independent court of law in the first instance. You have to spend millions, typically, in defending yourself before the agency, and an agency in which the ultimate judge is also the party that wrote the laws, that is, the regulations that you're being prosecuted under, and actually controls the prosecution. So the judge is also the prosecutor, and in that instance, of course, there can be no justice. So that is what we face, and really we have to end the administrative courts, and we have to eliminate the administrative state. And I wrote a bill for Ron Paul many years ago that I plan to reintroduce when I'm in the Senate called the Congressional Responsibility and Accountability Act. And what that would do is cause every proposed regulation to have no legal force or effect unless passed into law by Congress, and would take all existing regulation and sunset it within 3 years unless passed into law by Congress. And this would restore the constitutional separation of powers and also the Article 1, Section 1 requirement that only Congress make the law. And it would also, as I mentioned about getting rid of the administrative courts, restore the constitutional role of the Article 3 courts, which do provide you with the protections that I mentioned before that are denied in the administrative context. So these are important changes that are essential for the survival of liberty in America. Everything from our open border crisis to FDA censorship of health information and the mandates on vaccination and masking are all part of the administrative state. The president, in this instance Joe Biden, has used the administrative state repeatedly in instances where he's effectively legislating, and that was the province of the legislative branches. The Supreme Court has said to him many times, but he just continues to violate the law, the Constitution, with impunity.
Well, those are powerful points and powerful direction in terms of where you're headed, Mr. Emord. I don't know. I'm not sure. I think I can go either into the FDR, or I can go into the what you're trying to achieve, what you're going to achieve when you're elected to Senate. So while we don't, while Citizens does not endorse any specific candidates, we certainly are very supportive of the work that you have done and are going to do for the United States and for the constituents of Virginia. So can you go into some of the ways that you would, and I can get into specific things about the FDA, the pharma being captured by, FDA being captured by pharma. But if you could go into, broadly speaking, some of the ways that you might reform the FDA, hold back some of its anti-dietary supplement prior restraint activities. Just give us an overview of that, Jonathan.
Sure. So a lot of people don't realize this, but the FDA routinely censors nutrient disease information. So there are all sorts of nutritional relationships which are critical to the survival of many, many Americans. For example, the cases that we've won against the FDA include ones that involve folic acid, which is a B vitamin that reduces the risk of neural tube defect births by as much as 80%. If you take 0.8 milligrams, that is 800 micrograms daily, and you're a woman of childbearing age, you reduce your risk of a neural tube defect birth by as much as 80%. And you need to take it in the form of a dietary supplement to assuredly get what you need. And FDA censored that information for over 10 years at a cost of 2,500 preventable neural tube defect births a year. That's spina bifida and encephaly when your brain, when you're born with your brain outside of your skull or your spinal column outside of your spine outside of your spinal column. And those things create enormous horrors for families, for the individuals affected, of course, and also for the cost of trying to keep children alive who suffer from these things. And it caused countless neural tube defect abortion-related abortions. And we prevailed in that case, Pearson versus Shalala, and the FDA was forced to stop censoring that ultimately. We had to sue them a number of times to get them to do that. But when they did do that, the incidence of neural tube defect births in America went way down, so that the numbers of neural tube defect births went way down annually, and the incidence of NTD-related abortions went way down, so much so that the March of Dimes basically disappeared, and most of their tens of thousands of people who are walking around today healthy who would otherwise have suffered neural tube defect births, but their mothers got the information and took the B vitamins and saved them. Also, omega-3 fatty acids in coronary heart disease, so the OMB actually during the pendency of our petition issued a prompt letter asking the FDA commissioner to release that claim because it would save an estimated 100,000 people a year from sudden death heart attack, according to the OMB. So these things have profound consequences. So what do we need to do? Well, what we need to do is strip the FDA of jurisdiction over the review of health claims so that the First Amendment reigns supreme again. You shouldn't have to justify to the government your speech. In the first instance, you have a right to speak, and that's true whether it's commercial speech or political speech. The Founding Fathers didn't distinguish between the two. And when you communicate falsely or fraudulently, then you're subject to prosecution, but not until you do so. So the prior restraint that the FDA has in place is grossly unconstitutional. And if we are to honor the Constitution, ensure freedom reigns, and allow people maximum information about how nutrients can reduce disease so that they can make informed decisions in the market, well, you have to strip FDA of this massive censorship regime that it has in place and force them to supply the Justice Department with information. If there's a party that is committing an act of fraud, they could be prosecuted. But in the first instance, you know, in all other areas of speech, other than this health claims area, you get to speak. In the first instance, government can't impose a prior restraint. Prior restraints are anathema to the First Amendment. And yet, in this instance, they say no. You have to go to the government, petition the government, get the government's review and approval before you can open your mouth. Well, that's rank. It violates the First Amendment. But it also subjects all speech about health-related issues and nutrients to a prior restraint that is dominated by political forces within the agency. So over and over again, politics reigns over science at FDA, and the drug industry's interests are predominant, so they protect the drug industry from forms of competition arising from people learning about how nutrients can help you reduce the risk of disease.
Well, those are great points. I may be misquoting the statistic, but I believe that the operating budget of the FDA, I don't know if it's the FDA's enforcement budget or if it's the overall budget, I'm not quite clear, but I believe maybe it's as much as 50 to 60% of the FDA's operating budget is paid for by user fees paid by pharmaceutical companies to the FDA. Is that correct?
Yeah, it accounts for about three-quarters of their budget, or about $1.1 billion from the pharmaceutical industry funding alone. So that's, he who pays the piper calls the tune, and that's really the case here. There's no question. I mean, you and I have watched this for years, and there have been whistleblowers who testified before Congress over and over and over again about this from the FDA. And that is that the FDA bends over backwards to protect drug companies, and that, of course, is richly explained in my book, The Rise of Tyranny, and also by, I think it was John Abramson, Dr. John Abramson's book. I forget the name of it offhand, but he also had a very good and detailed explanation of how pharma calls the FDA's shots and case after case after case. And the FDA basically is a patsy for the drug industry, protects it from competition, and so it censors information about supplements, and it approves unsafe drugs. We had Dr. David Graham years ago testify before Grassley's Finance Committee about how the American public was virtually defenseless against the approval of unsafe drugs, and certainly that has continued. It hasn't abated, and Congress has taken no serious step to prevent the horrors that Dr. David Graham described from recurring at FDA. It is still very much a captive of the drug industry, and as a consequence, I mean, we have just the COVID example. For example, we have a vaccine for COVID that is rushed through the FDA, and the drug itself is really incapable of, as we know, of preventing you from getting COVID, because many people were vaccinated got COVID. And it's the third most common adverse effect in the Pfizer adverse effects that ultimately they wanted to suppress for 99 years, but got out because of a good judge doing the right thing and forcing it into the public. But then we also see that it did not prevent you from transmitting the disease. And then the immunity that was claimed at first to be more fulsome than natural immunity ends up being far less fulsome than natural immunity. Indeed, it may last a matter of weeks, if that, and it's not complete. And that's why people who got vaccinated still got COVID. So that whole thing was a massive regime of both censorship and protectionism for the industry against allowing truthful criticism of the vaccine. Dr. Robert Malone, who's endorsed my candidacy, he was a very strong and vocal critic and has been all the way to the present. But for over a year, they censored him and wouldn't allow his criticism out, nor would they allow doctors to criticize it. They suppressed all of the early treatments, ivermectin and hydroxychloroquine among them, that were effective in reducing the severity, length of the disease. So we have to be very careful about government censorship, because we've witnessed through Dr. Fauci, and who's the greatest betrayer of the United States, my judgment, cause over 1.1 million people to be to lose their lives as a result of government actions that have denied people and doctors and other healthcare professionals the right to freely communicate how to cope disease. And, we could have had a wide open, robust debate about it. Instead, we had government censorship and a one-size-fits-all answer. Either you get vaccinated or you're dead. And as it turned out, many got vaccinated and died.
Or had long-term COVID symptoms. Sorry, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's well, aside from that, Jonathan, I mean, look at the fact that the NIH sponsored gain-of-function research at the Wuhan Institute of Virology.
That's right. The NIAID, through Fauci, ensured that
right.
even during the presence of executive orders that prohibited the funding, they continued to fund it through EcoHealth and Ralph
mm-hmm.
Barrick's operation at the University of North Carolina. Yeah, he was funding all along gain-of-function research since 2007, even before that perhaps, but at least until 2007.
Right.
And at the enemy of our country. I mean, communist China is no friend of ours, and they have a massive bioweapons program that operates through the Institutes of Virology throughout China. And
mm-hmm.
They had developed SARS-1 through the Beijing Institute of Virology. And here SARS-2 COVID comes along, and it's part of gain-of-function research that Fauci was supporting financially and also providing them even the human cell line from AMRID, the American Defense Research Entity, and also through Barrick and through EcoHealth, Peter Zasek at EcoHealth, all that information necessary for them to create a new virus. In fact, I believe it was 2007, Fauci was at an academic conference, and he was asked a question. This was videotaped. I think it's still on YouTube. Well, aren't you afraid that there'll be a global pandemic from this gain-of-function research that you're financing? Notice that he didn't correct him and say, oh, that's not gain-of-function research, as he did to Senator Rand Paul. He, frankly, had no problem with it being referred to as gain-of-function research in 2007. And he said in response to it that, well, a pandemic, he said, well, that's the risk we run for scientific research. So he took it upon himself to impose upon the United States and the world the risk of a pandemic and the loss of massive amount of human life to pursue this research in communist China, even against the wishes of the presidents that he served under, and it resulted in the most horrific bioweapon in world history, and he should be held to account for that. Because he is directly
mm-hmm.
responsible for
yep.
it.
I agree, and it also boggles the imagination why we, meaning the United States or any arm of the United States, would partner with a sworn enemy of the United States, the communist Chinese government, partner with them on bioweapons experiments. I cannot fathom it unless it's just the ultimate arrogance of scientific ignorance where you say, well, let's just tinker around and skirt a few regulatory or legal things here and let's just go forward. I mean, it just boggles the imagination, boggles my imagination at least.
Well, it's the ultimate betrayal. You know, we think Benedict, when you think of an American traitor, you think of Benedict Arnold. Well, what Benedict Arnold did, bad as it was, is absolutely nothing compared to what Anthony Fauci did. What Fauci did was the ultimate betrayal of the United States, because the consequences of it were the loss of so many people's lives. And it was callous, in total disregard of life. And it was done purposefully and over years. And the consequences of it have been and are still being felt and will continue to be felt. And that is beyond reprehensible. I mean, this is something for which he should pay. And, you know, why we don't have him incarcerated is really the question, because in the end he abused his power. He lied before Congress when he testified that it wasn't gain-of-function research. He knew full well and fully understood it in his correspondence to be gain-of-function research, and he covered it up and he lied about it, as he did about the origins of the disease. There was no one who seriously thought that the disease had natural origins. It was well understood that the research involved here created something that does not exist in nature, and that it probably, in all probability, 99%, I would say, it leaked out of the Wuhan lab, then into the
– You've been listening to the Citizens for Health radio show, brought to you by Citizens for Health on buildingfortunesradio.com with Jim Turner and Peter Mingle. Thanks for listening. For nearly two decades, Citizens for Health has been a nonprofit pioneer in the natural health freedom movement. Go to www.citizens.org to learn more and always listen in to Building Fortunes Radio, where our special host, Jim Turner, shares crucial information about many of the most important issues that affect your world. Citizens for Health provides over 100,000 supporters with consumer news, action alerts, and opportunities to take action. So listen in, get involved, and help spread the word. Be sure to check out the buildingfortunesradio.com website to hear more Citizens for Health segments with Jim Turner and Peter Mingle. And read about what's new on www.citizens.org. It's been our privilege to have you listen in. Jim Turner, Peter, and I want to say thanks for listening and ask you to go spread the word. Tell a friend, join our newsletter, and go make a difference in your world.